There's two of us here. Russell Sutherland, and myself, Patrick Long. A little bit of background. Russell is an engineer, chemical engineer, I believe. His specialty at the moment is that he is working with the University of Toronto, and he looks after their networking, computer networking, and the hookup to the internet and all of those things for the university. He's also an elder in his assembly, and he also serves as a director for MSC Canada. And we appreciate his contribution to MSC, not simply in his computer expertise, but also in many, many other ways. He's likely the most conservative member of the group. I was thinking in other terms, but anyway, we'll let that one lie, and people can let their imaginations run riot with that one. My name is Patrick Long. I'm a mining engineer, but I haven't mined for many years. Itinerant preacher in Ontario, and for many years involved with the Emmaus Correspondence Courses. More recently, that has been handed over to others. After 30 years, we felt it was time. I help at Everyday Publications and also MSC Canada. I share in the administration. Bill Yule and I share those duties. And more recently, I have become involved with all of the publications and also looking after the website and things like that. Incidentally, and I brought it along here somewhere, our president, Bill Yule, is very insistent that everything that we do by way of publication be driven by the website, or by computers actually, but this by the website. So what we've done over the last little while is that all of the information that is in this book is first on the website. And then early in December, I took all the text files, stripped out the HTML code, massaged it for quark, and published this booklet. So I took a disk to the printers, and within 2 weeks, so that this is not quite as up-to-date as the website, because we've made two changes since then. People send us in information like change of email address and things like that. So I mention that because later on that does have a bearing. We believe that that communication is very important, and communication has changed drastically in our generation. Just a few thoughts about that, the whole idea of communications. I was born in Africa, and I was just thinking about this. I can remember as a boy, an elderly African brother would come to our house Monday morning, and there would be a old wooden tea chest. Some of you might remember the old wooden tea chest that tea was packed in many centuries ago. And our mail would be put in that, a few instructions for him. When he would get to the rail station, the railhead where he was going, he would put that on his shoulder and a little stick on the other side to balance it on his shoulder, and he would take off down the path running, and he would cross the Kasai River, and then he would go to the town on the railway. Those letters would be taken out of the box, handed to the post office people. It would go on the train, old steam engine train, wood-burning steam engine train, go down to the coast, be loaded on a ship, travel to Lisbon or to Liverpool or to London or to wherever, eventually getting to where it was going. Now, some of those things Russell will be telling you are exactly the same today, only in a different format. The same sort of packaging, the same sort of relaying everything. But that's my memory of that dear man as he went on Monday morning, came back Thursday, and hopefully with some mail. Now, if the train was late or whatever, and he couldn't wait for it, then we had to wait another week for mail. And my father was telling me that there were times in the early days, back in the 30s, where they would sometimes be without mail for 3 months. That's hard for us to conceive of, because in our generation, we don't think in terms of those things. We think of instantaneous. We think of an email message going from here to the other side of the world in seconds. And a reply, if the person has logged on or whatever, reply coming back. And even using things like ICQ and AIM, you can be really interactive communication over the internet at enormous distances. And it's a whole new generation. It's a whole new way of thinking. Now, we have become totally used to all of these things. I was talking with some of the folk down in the Listowel area, and there's some young lads here from there, and they were telling me about these new combines. When you take your combine out into the field, it is automatically reading the satellite, the GPS, and as it travels along, it measures the moisture content of your crop, it measures the weed content of your crop, the bushels per acre, and all of that is fed into the computer. Take the little diskette, and then in the springtime as you go out to fertilize, the company will give you another diskette, you put it in, and your fertilizing takes place automatically to proportion the fertilizer where it is needed. And that's contact with the satellites. And all of these things are things that many of us, particularly the younger ones, today just take for granted. They were unthought of back when many of us were younger. Now, I wanted also just to touch on some biblical things, because we are dealing with missionary activity, and I wanted to just touch on some of these things, how they affect us, and how they relate to the Scriptures. The first point I wanted to emphasize is that our God is a God who communicates. I was a little bit surprised in the last session at the response, the reaction on people's faces when I mentioned this, but some time ago I was reading in a book that was dealing essentially with the fact of a triune God, and mentioned that this book touched on the fact that the concept that we take for granted, as John writes to us and he says that God is love, that if we are Unitarian in our thinking, then that statement has no meaning before creation, if God is Unitarian. But we understand from the Scriptures that God is a Trinity. Now, we don't understand how all this thing works. I mean, let's face it, we can't get our heads around the nature of God to that point. But it does add a dimension to it when we stop to think that in eternity, past, present, or future, because there's no such thing with eternity, we have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and there is communion. There is communion. And we read in John where our Lord Jesus says that, as the Father, in chapter 20, as the Father hath sent me, so send I you. And the Father sent the Son. The Son gladly and joyfully responded. And the Spirit responds also, I will ask the Father, and he will send the Comforter, and so on. And so our God is a God who communicates, first of all, within the Godhead, but secondly also, as we'll see in a moment or two, with us. Not only that, but also our God is a God who has made us, made mankind, in his image. And communication is a major part of that. A major part of that. I mean, right now, you people are not really communicating at full steam with me, except by expression on your face and so on. But we know communication. I mean, last night there were some people who were out in the halls after the curfew. Well, why were they out in the halls after curfew? Because communication is a big thing. We like and enjoy communicating. And I can remember when Gail and I were involved at a summer camp, a day camp, children's camp. One year, several years actually, there was a group that brought some disadvantaged children along to the camp with somebody who would help them, and several of these were autistic. And if you've ever worked with autistic children, then you know the significance of communication or the lack of communication. Communication is very important. And those of us who are married know what it is like when the husbands, more likely than the wives, sulk a little bit and don't communicate, you know. Go to bed, turn your back on your wife and all those things. Those things don't happen, do they? What are you laughing about? No. A unique case, right. No, they do happen, and we use communication not only to communicate but also to control and so on. And it's a very, very important thing. One thing I should add as I'm going along, I'm very comfortable with being interrupted, and Russell, I would gather, is as well. So feel free if you have a question or something that maybe is poorly stated to stop or raise a question or whatever. Don't mind that at all. We've got an hour together. And we'll likely fill up the hour, but still, it's our intention that there be feedback and communication as we go along. Okay, now, communication is a very important thing. The other thing to keep in mind is that our God has given us, in a very real sense, the living Word, our Lord Jesus. We can't think of John chapter 1 without thinking of that. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. And He is indeed the living Word. Not only that, but we also have the written Word. God, who at sundry times and in diverse manners spoke unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son. He is not silent. He is not a silent God. He is one who communicates. And the other thing is, in connection with the Bible, that we have much in the Scriptures that speak to us of communication. Lie not one to another. Let your conversation, and of course that's meaning more than just your speech conversation, be so and so and so and so on. And there's much in the Scriptures that talk about communication. It is extremely important. It's a very important aspect. Now, the last thing that I wanted to touch on right now in this particular part is we're talking in this workshop more about the whole concept of how communication works or should work with regard to missionaries. And one of the things that happens is that a missionary is commended and to the Lord's work and goes out to the field or whatever, and sometimes, unfortunately, well, bye, see you in 5 years or whatever, and sometimes that's pretty well the extent of communication. Not always, and we're very thankful for the other cases, but there needs to be communication. With commendation is the whole idea of responsibility. There is a responsibility. There's a responsibility on the part of the missionary to communicate back to the assembly. There's a responsibility of the mission, the assembly to communicate with the missionary to communicate with the assembly, and those who are praying for and supporting in financial ways as well to communicate with the missionary, and that goes back and forth. As I mentioned, I'm involved with MSC Canada. Each month, the committee sits down to distribute funds which have been given to us as the Lord leads. And that doesn't form a major part of our funds, but it does form a part, and we sit down and we pray and we distribute those funds to missionaries that we sense are in need. There are several missionaries that we know from experience do not write letters. So when we distribute those funds and we want to distribute to those particular missionaries, we have to be careful. And one of the questions that is asked as a name comes forward, well, will this person mind not getting a letter? Because we know that those particular missionaries, just letter writing is not something that they do. And we feel badly about that. And we, one of them in particular, who's younger, the older one, we don't worry too much about because perhaps it's too late to do much in the way of changing that person. But the younger one, we put pressure on them. Say, listen, you've got to write letters. You've got to tell people. You've got to thank people. You've got to acknowledge gifts and so on. And so we put a little bit of pressure on them. From our point of view, because we do believe it is important. But there is that need to communicate, and it's a very precious thing. My wife and I were on the mission field, for a number of years in Colombia, and it was the highlight of the day. And I don't mean that in a superficial way, to go to the mail, turn the key in the mailbox, and see what was there. Letters from home, letters from family, letters from the assembly, letters from friends who had become friends, some of them because of the letters that they had written over the years. And some of those friendships and relationships have lasted until the present day, and that's a very precious thing. I'd like to stop there, and I'm going to give Russell a lot of time. Tends to be wordy, and but it may be an opportune time for you to make comments or thoughts that might come out at this particular moment. Yes.
This morning I was in the workshop talking about short-term missions. These missionaries that don't write, they need a short-term helper to do the recording.
Well, that's another possibility, but it's in a sense it's a stopgap, though. It's not the... the question was raised this morning by a brother, well, you know, maybe we're asking the missionary to do too much in answering all these letters, and my comment was that it doesn't really take that long to sit down and write 5 letters. Out of a whole week or whatever, that is not really a large block of time. And most people would be more than happy if it were just a simple little thing. Listen, we got your letter, we got your gift, we really want to thank you for praying for us, we really want to thank you for this. Enclose a form letter if you wish, but make a personal comment as well. And this, of course, doesn't touch on the email, but it's just a side thought in the whole area of communication. It's such a precious thing to get just a little letter, whatever it might be. And I would encourage any missionaries who are present to do that on a regular basis. It doesn't take very long. And if you want to really cheat on it, you can make a letter on your computer for one person, and then you go back in, and then you say, well, now, who's the second letter going to? Well, I'll just change a little bit here and a little bit here and change a little bit here because it fits there, that relationship, and boom, there goes the second letter out to the printer, and the printer gives it to you, fold it up, and that way you can save quite a bit of time. And nobody needs to know. Okay, are you ready, Russell? I'll give you this device.
Was this a mouse here, or?
No.
Whiskers?
Cockroach.
Okay. All of these things that I'm going to say are really in your notes there. I just wanted to make some general comments about the Internet and what it is and about email. I'm sure that there'll be some other questions or comments that you might have. I'm just going to put it all up there. Patrick likes to have a great suspense. They just unfold the line at a time. I just put it all up there because it's in your notes anyway. So not a big deal. We're dealing now with a brand new generation of younger folk. I'd like to really think about that because it's the younger folk who will be the missionaries and those that support missionaries in the next few decades. And the whole younger generation thinks differently and has different technology and uses it differently than I think we did. Just as an illustration, my own son a few years ago had an interest in, he'd always been interested in anything to do with engines, and he wanted to get involved in gas-powered helicopters. And so without my wife or I knowing, he just got on the Internet, this thing, and he started to talk with other people about helicopters, and within a few weeks, he actually bought a helicopter over the Internet, found who was selling one used, got the transaction, and then just before his final exams, this big box comes in the mail with this big helicopter in it. And we had to sort of tell him, well, after your exams. And then he found out that he didn't have all the right parts, so he just used the Internet and found a few other places and got all this stuff. So the whole way of communicating and even doing business is just so much changed. And so these old methods of even the telephone or fax have been really outdated with email. And the Internet, I think, has really changed the world for good. The old world will not come back again, even though we might want it or hanker for it. It just won't come back. And so I just wanted to think about just for a little while about the Internet. A friend of my brother-in-law's who works at Bell Labs a few months ago did some research because at Bell Labs they have all these hours for these eggheads to do this kind of stuff, and he tried to make a map of the Internet. So here's a map of the Internet in North America. Now, this doesn't include your machines. These are just the main machines, these main computers that actually drive the Internet. And that's what the Internet is. It's thousands of machines that sit in basements of buildings, and they're very expensive, and they're interconnected with copper and fiber and different other things, maybe even satellites. And they're all hooked up to each other, and they sort of form this new worldwide kind of a backbone for information data to move from point A to B. Now, the telephone network has already existed like this for many decades, but just 2 years ago, this new network, which is the Internet, has really surpassed the old telephone network in terms of how much equipment and how much information is actually moved through it. And it's a bit different than the old network. The telephone network, as you remember from the old days, when you made a call, you picked up your phone and then And then there was a few manual connections. People plugged things in down at the head office, and then eventually you actually had a piece of copper going from your telephone in Bangor, Maine, over to San Diego. There's actually a fixed connection going all the way through, and as you talked, the electrons went back and forth, and it all worked. This internet works quite differently. It works like the post office does in the sense that you just put an address on your letter here, and you simply just throw it in here, and you don't really know or care how it gets there, as long as it gets there. And that's how the internet works. All of these machines sort of know about all the other machines, or they know the best way to get to the other machine, and your little email message comes in over here down at the lower left, and these things somehow get through to the other end, and somehow there's a thunderstorm, and part of the internet goes out, and the stuff just goes a different way, and it gets there, and you don't know really how or why, but it just happens. And this network, it's been there for about 25 years, but it's only in recent years due to the economies and due to the availability of cheap kind of bandwidth that it's so accessible. So that's what the internet looks like. Not that it's helpful, but it just gives you an idea that it's a complex thing down below. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about it. I just got some numbers here from the internet, of course. The internet, I think, is one of the greatest technological revolutions that we've seen in our lifetime. There have been many since I've been around, about 45 years. The sort of the advent of the telephone in everyone's house, of course, the television, the birth control pill, major change in all society back in the 15th and 16th century. The printing press, of course, revolutionized the whole of culture. People now could read. There was sort of stuff that they could get cheaply that they could read. So that changed the whole of society. And the internet has done the same thing. As I speak now, there are millions of people who are sitting at their keyboard and they're typing stuff in, like this. And they're just typing it in. A lot of it is not very good quality, but nevertheless, they're typing it in. And books are being typed in, and letters are being typed in, and references are being typed in. My nephew in Calgary sends me and my son a little quiz every day to stump us. And a lot of the stuff I don't know, but I just look it up on the internet, and it's just there. I just can tell him everything about the date when Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier. That was his last question. I didn't know myself. I just typed in two words, and it was all there. Everything about Chuck Yeager and the X1 and when it happened and why it happened and pictures, it's all there. So the internet has just revolutionized all of culture. It's broken down the bamboo curtain, the iron curtain. Those things are just useless now. Useless. Just like the aircraft was when it came, all of this sort of trench warfare became obsolete overnight. Hence, the same thing with about keeping information private. It's just changed the whole way that we can communicate, and it just makes it so much easier and so much faster. And here are some numbers about machines that are actually on the internet. 2 years ago, there was about 100 million machines that were actually connected to the internet at very low speeds. Right now, there's at least 300 million machines that are connected to the internet at a much higher, sort of larger pipe going to them, which means simply that you can get more information, higher quality information at the same period of time. And the email phenomena and the World Wide Web, these are the two things that seem to be driving the internet. And people are using them not just for communicating, but for commerce and for the propagation of good and evil, right? The technology itself is neutral, and we're great users of technology. All the things that we got here by train and bus and car, those are things that are all to do with technology. And so the internet itself is neutral, but on the internet, there's all kinds of evil things. It's an easy way for people to push pornography. I think that's the number one use of the internet would probably be pornography. That's just so easy, it's so cheap, it's so natural, and there's all kinds of good stuff and junk stuff and useless stuff. But so we should just sort of be aware of it. We shouldn't be ignorant of it. We shouldn't shun it. It's there. It's changed society, and society will not never go back again. I'd like to talk a little bit about etiquette. I don't have very good manners myself. My mother told me that for 20 years. My wife told me that for 25 years. But so I'm not the best person to talk about etiquette. However, I have learned a few things. I've been using email for about 15 years. and I've learned a few things about email, and I've just listed two or three of them here. Word wrap is the idea that when you're typing at your keyboard, often with the newer programs, you don't have to hit that button over here. If any of you ever used those old typewriters, you'd have to go over, and then if you didn't hit that button there, there'd sort of be some kind of a seizure at the right-hand side, and the thing would get jammed, and you'd go, oh, no, rip it out. But when you're typing an email message, I think it's good practice to try to hit that button, even though it may seem as if it's doing it for you. Often what happens is when I receive email, it's sort of just one long line that's been sort of wrapped around 15 times. And some people's programs that they use to read email aren't that intelligent. So I'm just saying, as a courtesy to other people who don't have the same intelligence in their computer that you have, knowing that people who have computers in the third world maybe had what you had 3 years ago. So you should just be aware of that. And I like to, whenever I'm typing a message, every 30 or 40 characters, just sort of hit that button. It's not that much work. I get some exercise for that pinky there, and I feel good about all the calories that I had for breakfast. So that's one thing. The second point has to do with HTML. HTML is this sort of language that you can have that helps you write these web pages. So some of you have written web pages. People in kindergarten are doing it. You can do it too. But some people, when they set up their email programs or they give them to you, think it's so nifty that when they send email, they use this HTML language to send it. And unfortunately, other people who read the email don't have intelligent enough machines to actually read it. So they don't get those nifty blue flashing letters or stuff like that, which doesn't really help the message, but it just somehow people think it looks neat. So if you have an email program that has 1,000 options, try to find the option that says plain text only and click that one. Oops, thank you. Dave, I've got a convert already. So that's one thing that you should look for. I think in some programs it'll say plain text only, plain text plus HTML, or just HTML. Just put the plain text, because also, and I'll get into this, in other countries, even in a developed country like France, for example, they may pay 10 times as much as you do to get on the Internet. Even though they're as modern as we are here, the way that the pricing works for telecommunications is very expensive. So the more junk that you add to your email, and HTML might add 2 or 3 times as much information per message, they're paying for that. And you're making them pay for that, and there's really no benefit to them. It's not as if it's some aesthetically pleasing thing either. So find that button if you've got some modern email thing and just turn it off. Mr. Gates might, if you know Mr. Gates, maybe this thing's turned on by default. And just turn it off. He doesn't mind, okay? He's already got his money from you.
What you're saying is that a Microsoft product will almost certainly have it defaulted on.
Yeah, I need a translator. It's so cryptic up here. In email, if I can just, here's a typical email message, sort of how it looks. Email messages sort of have these two different parts to them. The bottom part is the conventional part that we would normally use in writing a letter. The top part is stuff that helps the message sort of get from A to B, has these addresses, who it's to, Patrick received this one, who it's from, Bob Bramhill, and some other things that got stuck on there by the actual programs. The date, for example, you don't have to type that in, luckily. And the subject, that's an optional line that you can put in your message. Some of your programs will force you to put it in, but it's really optional. And then these X things, they're just things that get tagged on. They're sort of optional. That one XML just tells you what program actually was used to send the mail. Those don't really matter. But in these fields called the header, the important ones are the two, and there's a thing called CC, carbon copy, and blind carbon copy. These are the three ones that I think are useful in terms of etiquette. Of course, you have to put someone's address in the two field, or it may never get anywhere. But here's an example of a friend, to many of us here, who wrote a note, and here's the header of his message. Now don't laugh, because he may be in the audience. Okay? So be sensitive about that. And don't complain about it. So a statement of fact would tell me that there's a lot of people on that list. And that was one thing that Patrick mentioned that's sort of convenient about art that you see there. The dear saints is really the important part, isn't it? All this other stuff basically is going to go to each person. Everyone gets all that stuff. So for one thing, they find out who it's going to, which you maybe don't want them to know, but they will anyway. And for another thing, it sort of clutters up the message. For the third thing, it may be, in terms of the whole size of the message, it might be 90% of it, which is not what you really want. So this person put these, notice different brother, doctor, mister, and Ms. These are all significant. If you ever see a fellow named Joseph, look for him, he's here. He'll explain to you the brother, the doctor. I'm trying to get to the doctor stage, but it's very hard. That's the elite. These are the people that speak at, you know, get to speak at our conferences and stuff like that. I don't think I'll ever get there. But anyway, try not to do that. If you do have a large list that you want to send to, don't use the to field. Don't use the CC field. If you use the CC, carbon copy, the same thing like will happen. Every person gets all the stuff. I don't want to get all the stuff. Perhaps you do, but I don't really. If there's a BCC field, that's preferable because what happens with, here's one example, is that your mail program will know that this is a blind carbon copy and it'll somehow mask all this stuff here and send it to the right people, but they won't get all of this big list of information. Here's an example of something that Patrick sent to a large list here, and the recipient just gets this kind of a sort of a masked effect where you just don't know who it's coming to, but it came to you, so you assume that Patrick sent it. So the rule is, if you have a large number of people to send a message to, you should use the BCC field to do that, or sometimes the person who you buy your service from will offer you like a mailing list service, and you just send it to the mailing list, which has just one name, and they make sure that it goes out with just the minimum amount of header information per message. Okay. I'm getting a bit sore now. Any other comments or questions? David. Well, he has so many of them, it's so confusing. Patrick has an identity crisis. I'm not sure if he's PBL or Patrick or people call him David. James, somebody even called him James a little while ago. No, I think Patrick, you know, he has this alias. Anyway, I think it's both. I use PBL because I like the short things. I mean, I prefer P, but, you know, he doesn't want that.
That's
so. P at B would be the best for me. Okay, what else do we have here? This is the idea about economy. For us, it's so cheap now, it's almost criminal. $10 for 30 hours a month, $10 for unlimited connection. If you're willing to take all of the barrage of capitalism, free internet connection, as long as you get all the ads on your screen, or as long as you fill out all these surveys. So the internet is really becoming almost for us free to us to be connected to it. Other places and countries, it can be very expensive. It can be that they have to make a satellite connection out in the bush somewhere and pay maybe $10, you know, like a minute for that. It may be a long distance phone call to some capital city, or say, even in France, it's going to cost them a lot of money. And so the more junk you put in your message, the more it costs them. That's all I'm saying. And here are some things. When you respond to a message, you know that reply button. Sometimes when you push it, everything that was sent to you gets put in your message. And you say, neat joke. And then you send this sort of thing on. And your friend says, yeah, I'm going to send this like to my friends. And so my girls get this, all the stuff that's been forwarded 15 times, and people say, yeah, great, yeah, look at this. And all it is one little pun down here, but there's all kinds of little arrows and guys' comments on it. So when you're forwarding a message, often there's an option, sort of don't include the prior message or include the whole thing. If you want to include some of it, just cut out the stuff that's germane to your message. You know, like, tell me when you're arriving. You can leave that in and just say, you know, August the 13th at 1500 hours. Meaning, try to be thoughtful of the other person who really doesn't care about all the other part of the message. Don't forward these chain things. I'm trying to get people to stop doing that, but they do it. And then it takes 15 minutes to get down to the end to actually figure out what was being forwarded, which I don't like doing myself. And then we dealt with the long email list thing. As I say, it's quite good to have them, to have all of your friends and certain kind of people that you want to receive, like, the message. But remember, when you do that, to only try to forward it to the people that you want to, and try to minimize this header portion that comes on each electronic message. Patrick?
One thing you forgot to put on there is
attachments. Oh, yeah. Attachments. Some of you like to take pictures of your grandchildren or your sister's wedding or important things like that, and then you have a scanner, right? And then, because like, they're only like $15 now, and then you scan this huge low-quality image, and then you put it on your computer, and it takes up half your disk, and then say, I'm going to send this to all my friends because it's really neat. And then you sort of attach it, and you don't know that it takes them, you know, 15 minutes to sort of download it when they, and they're really mad at you. You don't know that, but it does occur. So try not to put these nifty sort of attachments. I got an attachment last week from a dear lady who goes to Patrick's church. Now, there's no connection there in terms of Patrick, but she goes there, and it was some person giggling, and she thought it was really great, and it really didn't help me at all. It didn't help my day at all. I didn't know why she sent it to me, but she just thought it was cute, and for me, it really wasn't cute. But it was quite big too. It was a really big file, and so just be careful about the attachment stuff. That's all. I mean, if you want to bomb a Patrick, just attach everything and send it to him, and then that'll really mess him up. But you shouldn't do that. I mean, it's nice to be able to send multimedia stuff and pictures. It can be quite helpful, but just do it with some discretion. That's all I'm saying. Because those things are big. Relative to what you type, those things might be a factor of 10 or 100 times the size of your actual message. And the person on the other end, as I say, is paying for that stuff maybe twice or three times as much as you are, and it costs them a long time, and they get it and they say, that's just junk, or, you know, why did they ever send it to me? And so now you've really got them mad at you. Patrick?
A rule that I gave them down at the Mystery Conference for Missionaries is that never send an attachment without the permission of the recipient. So
sure, that's
you
right.
Check ahead of time and say, listen, I've got something I'd like to send you as an attachment. Is it okay?
Sure.
And then they will either say, yes, sure, send it, or, no, don't. I can't do this anymore.
You probably
want to utilize the... Yeah, okay, yeah. But some places, like, we were talking the last time about Chocolopi in Zambia, for instance, they get up at 2 in the morning, because that's the only time they can even get on the phone line, never mind download files from the internet. And even then, they might not get a good connection. So if somebody had it scheduled ahead of time, okay, this is your night to get up at 2 and get on the phone line, get these messages out or whatever. So in most cases it doesn't matter that. But most camera pictures you're talking 20-30K to start with, even if it's quite well compressed.
Okay, any comments on the etiquette end? Sir.
One other comment. A downside to using the VCC is then you may get the message 7 or 8 different times from people having not seen who it was.
That's correct. Yep.
So sometimes If it's information that you do want passed around to people, sometimes it is better to use the 2 because you end up getting the message because
mm-hmm.
people don't know what the message is. So,
sure.
So it can go. You just have to use some discretion there.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Actually, you can also put it on the web. There's a lot of places that they do it for free and then just give people the address.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to show your grandkids, you know, to the world, then you can put these pictures on your website, which no one may visit anyway, but they're available. Yeah, that's a much better idea. If you really have to sort of show yourself to the world, then yeah, use a website. A lot of them are free once you get an internet connection. The person who's giving it to you often offers you free some space, and you can put these nifty pictures up on the web and have your friends come and see them. Thank you, Dave.
Nice option, but maybe some people are in situations, and we've been in come here in Bolivia, we have a sub-server.
Yeah.
We work with a server in Santa Cruz, so we never get on the internet.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Our phone has been tied up sometimes half a day. downloaded some of this.
That's right. Just one thing about that, I can give you more details, but with some of the more modern people that give you services, when you read your email, most of you probably, when it says sort of retrieve my mail, you sort of get the, all of them come down all at once from the server to your machine. That's the normal mode, isn't it? When you say get email, it just sort of, it all comes down, and you don't know how many other there are, and you don't know how big they are. With some of the more modern email protocols, and some of the ISPs offer this, is the idea is you pick a different way of reading your mail. It's like sort of waking up in the morning and just sort of going, picking up the phone when you're still in your pajamas and figuring out if you have any mail at the local post office and how big they are and who they're from. So you don't get all of the junk coming down. All you get is just a header stuff, who it's from, and its size. So you can look at that first, and some of it, you say, I don't want to read that. You just say, delete. So before it comes down, you can actually manipulate it remotely. And if you want to know more about that, I can tell you about that. And some of the more modern email programs allow you to do that. It's a much better way for you, the consumer, to actually read and handle like your mail. The mail stays on another like machine that you don't have to worry about, and they save it and store it. Rather than it all coming down to your machine, your hard disk messes up, and now you've lost it all. So I'm just saying that that's available now, maybe not in other countries, but in Patrick?
Most email clients will allow you to set the size limit on messages that are received. It will say, you don't receive messages over 30K or don't receive messages over 100K or whatever it is. You can actually put in the size there if you think it's appropriate. Even don't even accept the message. That's the message.
So that's all I'm going to say about the etiquette. Security is the last thing that I wanted to talk about. Email is really an open thing. It's like sending postcards. You see, it's sort of worse than that because all of those machines that your email sort of goes through, at any point, people can look at your email if they want to at any point. Once it gets to the final destination, it's on someone else's like machine. Hundreds of people have access to that machine. So when you send email, just remember that really anyone can or will read it. Not that they will, but they can. And so it's like a postcard. And when you send that a postcard, and even when it gets to the recipient, right, it's on their machine, their kids can read it, their, you know, their grandparents, the neighbor who's in, anyone can read it. So I'm just saying, don't think that it's private. And if you want to have private email, you have to work really, really hard to make sure that only the person who you send it to is actually reading it. It's also very easy for me to send you a message that you think it's from me, but it's actually from Patrick. If any fool can do that. A grade 4 student can do that. Meaning fooling you, it sounds like it's from me. It has my name on it, but it's actually not from me at all. It's after Patrick pretending to be me.
Do you know any instance where that might have happened?
I was thinking something a bit more sophisticated than Patrick is talking about. But sure, my wife was communicating like with Patrick and asking a few questions, and then I just sort of stepped in and asked him a few questions, and he still thought it was me for some reason. I mean, yeah, that's right. So I'm just saying that email is just that kind of technology that you really, you don't necessarily know who's sending it. Yeah.
The point about anybody being able to intercept or read.
Yeah.
Something good to remember when we're sending email
quotes in
some of these undesignated countries.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I know that there'd be some places, some jurisdictions, where governments or corporations want to read all the email coming in and out. They want to look at it all just to make sure that things are going according to their code. And though that's going to be harder and harder for governments to have that kind of control, certainly when we're sending email to people in sensitive countries, you should be very careful of the content, be very careful about other email addresses that are on the same message, all of that. It is possible to encrypt your messages. It's free, it's cheap. The idea is that you have a certain password idea, and your friend knows it, and before you send it, you mess it all up, so it's all gibberish. And then you send it, and even if someone wants to read it, it just looks like gibberish, but your friend knows the key, you see, and then they can unlock the key and de-scramble it and now read your message. So that's like sending normal mail, isn't it? You put it in a envelope and it's sealed. And if it's broken, then people know about it. So one can do that. It's a bit more work. You have to manage these passwords. You and your friend have to know about the password. And then the other problem is someone who's looking at it knows it is encrypted. So this sensitive government says, why are you receiving encrypted mail? Why are you sending encrypted mail? I mean, there may be no reason, but it just raises red flags, right? I mean, if someone is looking, saying, well, here's a couple, and they always send encrypted mail to North America. So they just sort of get a knock on the door and just say, you know, we're just wondering, why are you always encrypting your mail? Is it something that you're trying to hide? So encryption is available, but I'm just saying that it may not be helpful if there is this notion of problem to do with content. It's also possible to not encrypt it, but just put a little sort of the equivalent of a signature on it. And it's done in a digital way. And what that means is that you can be sure that the person who claimed he sent it, and you can be sure that no one sort of tampered with the message en route. Yeah.
Just another comment, that a lot of computer viruses are sent via email.
Yeah.
Now, and it's presumed that it's from you, and it's this wonderful message, and you open it up, and then you're...
Yeah. Yeah. You should be wary of opening it, any attachment. That's a good point. There's more and more of these viruses, and people attach them, and then folks open them, and if you have the wrong kind of computer from the wrong company, you can really foul up your computer.
Hey, Russell?
Yeah.
I think probably my situation in Bolivia is similar to lots of missionaries, that our email is kind of like our post office box. It's like a station. It's like an email station. I receive messages there for four or five different parties.
Sure.
Sometimes I open other people's mail,
yeah,
because I can't tell who it's for.
Sure.
And so it's polite, this to go between etiquette and security somewhere, to put on the subject line message for someone.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Sure.
And then also, when I write letters, like, somebody's on the, I see somebody's doing a letter, and then I buddy in, like, one of our kids. Well, often we do, like, to phone call, put our name first, and we'll mark here.
Right. That's right. Just so people sort of know who's actually doing the talking. And then one last thing about email, and this is just a problem with the technology. Myself, I still would prefer to receive a sort of an old-fashioned letter myself, handwritten with that beautiful penmanship they still teach in schools, you know. Kids, you know how to write and spell beautiful letters and on a nice white envelope and a stamp. But with email, it's not quite as personal as conventional snail mail. It's just the nature of the technology. And once you start using email, like your telephone number, it's really public. Your address is public. You know that. I could probably find out most of your phone numbers and addresses. Most of you. Unless you've paid money to make sure that I can't. Same with an email address. And the more popular you are, the more email you send, the more time you spend on the web, the more likely your email address is going to show up in other people's, whatever, search engines. And so you'll receive all kinds of junk email, and you don't want it, and it just comes, and you don't even know where it's coming from. And if you wanted to find out who's the stupid person sending it, it would take you several hours, and then you wouldn't be able to do anything anyway. So it's a fruitless effort. Smart people are spending lots of time and money trying to stop this notion of unsolicited email or spam, but it's very hard to do that because it's very easy for the clever guys in grade 6 to actually just find a new little way, and then they just send it some other way. So they're wasting your computer time and your resources, and people like me spend hours trying to figure out who sent it. You know, because it may be objectionable, or it's obscene, or they're trying to sell you something that you don't want, or there's a lot of things about it. Once you start using it, you'll find out that you get stuff that you don't want. Just like there's junk fax and junk email, snail mail, you know, buy Sam's Pizza, it just keeps coming in. Same with this. That's just the way of it. And if any of you know of any way to stop it, well, you'll be a millionaire. Any comments on the security aspects of... Yeah?
If I hadn't been blocking senders, I'd be getting quite a bit of spam right now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the conventional email block for the...
Well, that's one way of combating it, but it's really a losing battle because there's all kinds of new people wanting to send you stuff, and once they know that you bought this one, then they just register with another one. So, you know. I mean,